Hello and welcome to Hey Kids Comics. We are back. You would normally be hearing this announcement made by none other than our host, Andrew Farmer. This is, of course, Cole Jedi Cole Houston filling in this week for Andrew. We took a week off last week. We needed to kind of reset, get things going again. This show, Rancor Pit, took a week off. A lot of other shows have been off a while longer. We're working on getting back and having a return to a new season of some shows where normally the summertime is the hiatus. And so we are back. This is Hey Kids Comics number 139, Beyond the Big Red Cheese. And if that name confuses you, that title, you obviously didn't scroll down and look at the flavor art to see. The Big Red Cheese was a kind of derogatory, I guess you'd say, nickname given to one Captain Marvel. Ironically, not from Marvel, a Fawcett Publications, also known as Shazam. And there's a lot of ground to cover with this character, and I'm not going to try to do it alone. And we tend to do much more engaging shows when we have guests. So this week, I have, I believe, former writer for Gordon and the Whale?
Actually,
or
yeah.
Or you still do that, and I'm just... my radar? Or?
Yeah, no. I've been way past that. I was writing full-time for Yahoo for a while, and now I'm basically doing my own site, Examiner.
Course, speaking to us is, of course, this is the voice of one Eric Shirey, who I failed to really accurately introduce there. But yes, you're... accomplished writer and reviewer, and have knowledge of things that appeal to us comic fans.
Yeah, I like to think of myself that way.
Well, I'm glad I could help bolster that for you.
Thanks.
And we are very fortunate this issue to have the kind of father-son team-up here. This is like the Von Erichs of Geekdom or something. We have with us Everett Shirey, Eric's son, who has joined us courtesy of the fact that they both dropped in at a comic and toy garage sale that Catherine and I had, Miss Jedi Cole and I had here at the house one day. And Everett, you got talking about Captain Marvel, and it always does my heart good when someone under the age of 40 knows who the hell that is.
Oh, yeah. He's definitely one of my favorite characters probably ever created.
And I want to take a brief moment to publicly shame... No, actually... hey, you are here artist Bobby Blakey's son. I knew was a huge fan of Captain Marvel as well. My original hope was to try to get both of you on the show, and I reached out to Bobby and says, well, I'll tell him, but he probably won't be interested. And then a few hours or the next day later, I hear, yep, not interested. So at least we have someone not only under the age of 40 who knows who Captain Marvel is, but also takes an active interest.
Yes.
So it was just such a fascinating conversation that I began to realize we've never really talked about this character. Who is, this is a character who's been around since 1940. And, he predates World War, or American involvement in World War II. Predates a vast number of the more popular characters out there.
Oh, yeah.
And I think is still periodically reinvented and still, to some degree, has to overcome that kind of quirky 40s, when comics were just for fun and you didn't have to worry your head too much about things.
Yeah, he's had a very different and unique approach in his character development over the past 60 years.
Yeah, and what's interesting is, the first encounter I personally had with Captain Marvel, I think, and not just the Shazam Isis Power Hour, mind you.
Yeah.
I remember having, I think it was a Treasury size, or else it was a collection that was more like the size of an oblong paperback novel.
Yeah.
But I remember having some kind of thing that had these different Captain Marvel stories in it.
Yeah, well, it's it's funny because, you know, I was reading up on him a couple of days ago, and it's very interesting to see how with National Comics, you know, the original publication company for Superman and Batman.
Yeah, it would go on to become DC Comics.
Well, yeah, and it's funny because it's actually, you know, Captain Marvel started out as a Fawcett publication character.
Yeah, initially, if you're not familiar with Fawcett, I remember the place that I knew the name personally was they were the company that would do the collected editions of the syndicated Family Circus cartoons.
Yeah.
And it was sort of like, oh, wow, that's the same people.
Yeah.
Well, they did a lot of that from what I read up on. They did a lot of the, like, comic strips and stuff like that. And then the whole way that Captain Marvel came up was the superhero boom started, and they were like, crap. We gotta get on this and make some cash.
Well, yeah, it's the original writer, if I remember his name correctly, was Bill Parker, and he actually joined Fawcett in 1939. And this was, I think, a year after Superman or Batman. Which one was it?
I believe it was just following Superman, because Superman and Batman were hot on each other's heels.
Yeah.
I think Batman follows Superman very closely because solely on the strength of success of Batman,
yeah.
Suddenly National Periodicals is like, or of Superman rather, like, okay, we've got to have another superhero. And, you know, that in itself is a tale.
Yeah.
They got something decidedly different, which is probably what put them on the map, is they didn't just say, let's make another Superman.
Yeah, exactly.
But apparently Fawcett did make another Superman.
Well, yeah. Fawcett actually picked it up. It was in 39. It was after Batman premiered.
Yeah. Oh, excellent. Okay.
Yeah, his first appearance was Whiz Comics, number 2.
Yes, the awkwardly named Whiz Comics.
Yeah.
Which today, you know, you... Again, speaking of a much more innocent era when you could name your comic book Whiz Comics.
Yeah.
They also published it in another periodical at the same time with a different name, and I can't remember what it was now.
And that wouldn't be uncommon for the time.
Right.
Because a lot of times you would have stuff that was published maybe as its own title, and then maybe some of the stories therein would be part of an anthology.
Yeah.
And then you can kind of double dip. And, you know, so
right.
Some poor kid who had a quarter and he's like blown 20 cents of that on 2 comics, like, what the hell?
Right. It's the same story.
Yeah. Oh, wow. And then, you know, the next month he does it again. What the hell?
Right.
Well, I made my money off short-term memory kits.
Yeah, it was both.
Yeah, it was... Well, pretty much what happened was whenever Fawcett decided to make this hero to almost rival Superman, you know, Ralph Day, I'm pretty sure. I'm very bad with remembering names. But,
Well, you remember any of them is rather impressive, because I'm actually worse than you are, apparently.
Well, it's funny because the Shazam, or Captain Marvel, who is now known as Shazam, you know, modern day, we all know him as Billy Batson.
Yes.
You know, that's his alter ego. He's, you know, the teenager that, you know, you can relate with.
Yeah, because like most teenagers of the era, he was a homeless, parentless teenager.
And he was fostering.
Who also apparently had a job at a radio station.
Yeah.
You know, how did this kid get to be so lucky? I mean, apart from losing his parents, he made up for it in spades there.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because we all think of Shazam as Billy Batson.
Yeah.
Well, you know, back whenever he was first written, it was actually 6 different people who turned into Captain Marvel all at once.
Well, I do recall that, you know, as the from what I remember reading ages and ages ago, like in Who's Who and from DC, and you can correct me if you know and that I'm wrong about this, or you can even if you're not sure, go ahead and correct me. But was it not the case that, like, if everybody was effectively suited up, the whole Captain Marvel family were all empowered simultaneously, that Captain Marvel himself was, his own personal power was diminished by that fact that he was like literally this party line of superpowers.
We'll see. In the New 52 continuity, which was the Shazam, I guess, revival of the late 2000s.
And this is where you really come in, by the way.
Yeah. In that continuity, the original, it shows Billy Batson, you know, and they change his origin and backstory a little bit. His parents are still dead, but instead of him working at a radio station, he's actually a foster child.
Okay.
And so he's bouncing from home to home. And he finally ends up in this one home that is a really good home. And he realizes this, you know. And one day he's walking through an old train station. It's the same, you know.
Well, it's like any given Spider-Man movie. You have to revisit the origin every time.
Yeah, but it's funny because they modernize it. So yeah. there's a broken iPad on the ground. or what seems to be an iPad.
Yeah.
You know? And they, I can't remember her name, but it was this vision that was telling him to go to, the actual, to get on the train to go to the Rock of Eternity.
Yeah.
Was it Pandora?
No, it wasn't Pandora.
Okay, alright.
Because really, you don't want to do anything she tells you.
Yeah. Right,
she is the least reliable.
Pandora is a totally different story.
Yeah. You don't want to get involved with her in any way, because whatever she tells you, it's probably wrong. Her capacity for misinterpretation is staggering.
Well, actually, it's funny because she actually comes into Captain Marvel's origin in this continuity.
And the thing is, that makes good sense because they're borrowing so heavily from the classics.
Exactly. And so, you know, he gets on the train and goes to the Rock of Eternity. And, you know, the wizard Shazam is there. You know, they obviously had to make him a little bit more politically correct. So he was actually like a... he was an old man, you know, but he wasn't like... He wasn't like ageless old. You know, like the original Shazam. Wizard Shazam, you know.
Does he still have the Gandalf look going on?
Yeah. He does, except he's a little bit more worn out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was he African-American, or did he look African-American or Ethiopian?
That was actually, as this is where Pandora comes in, is, you know, Pandora, we'll do a little backstory for Pandora real quick. Pandora opens the box of human sins and agony. And so it was her and two other people. And the gods that are under the presence, which would, you know, that's a different story. Sorry about that.
We're all over the map on this show.
So pretty much, you know, they open the box and the gods are like, what have you done? You know? And this kind of starts bringing in Black Adam. And if you guys don't know, Black Adam is Shazam's biggest foe.
Yeah, he's always been sort of like the anti-Shazam, or the like reverse Shazam, if you will.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah, and he has. And he has a very intriguing backstory.
Now, I know that, at least historically, I seem to remember that his origins actually do date back to ancient Egypt.
He does. It's not ancient Egypt. He has his own, there's a DC country.
Oh, that's right. Is he from Karak?
Yeah. It's I think it's Karan, or no, not Karan. I think it's Karak. Yeah.
Yeah, because Karak was invented or coined sometime in the 80s, if I'm not mistaken. So it was not always out there, But little by little, I think DC began to introduce more and more, you know, you had Markovia and some other non-existent but real-sounding countries, as they say in What's Up, Tiger Lily. you know, it became necessary to have relevant parts of the globe where you weren't necessarily, like, thumbing your nose at an actual country.
I remember.
Like Andorra. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. That's a real country.
his home country was Kondak.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Yes, yeah. I've heard of that as well. Yeah, Karak was one of those others that just sort of, you know, was called into existence, like like Latveria in Marvel Universe.
Right.
Yeah, but
or Wakanda.
Yeah, Wakanda. It's funny because, you
like,
know.
What kind of pizza you want?
What kind of pizza you want? Hey, man, watch out. We're getting into the DC Marvel multiverse.
Oh, yeah. Gotta be careful there.
But it's funny because, you know.
Don't cross the streams.
That's right.
going back to his origin story, you know. They opened what has come to be known as Pandora's Box. And, you know, you may know that from Greek mythology, absolutely, you know, if you're schooled in that.
Well, yeah, in fact, Pandora, the story of Pandora was like the ultimate, just like a woman.
It was.
Oh. Literally, no, the Greeks had invented the 1950s attitude of men toward women. Centuries before it came in common coinage in this country, and centuries before this country.
It reflects a lot of, you know, whenever you first meet her, she's just very innocent and she doesn't know what she's doing, you know, and it's very intriguing to see her character development after releasing what is inside the Pandora's box. It's a very interesting storyline that they've explored a couple times, you know, because if, for any of you hardcore DC, I guess you could say history, you know, lore people, what little people know is that Pandora's box affected three people, not just Pandora. It affected Pandora, and it also affected, if any of you know, The Question.
Oh, wow.
Yes, it affected The Question, and that is actually how The Question, why The Question has no face.
I was questioning that, and now I'm...
Yeah.
But that's interesting to me that what I really find fascinating, the more I learn about, like, the post New 52 and all the reboots and stuff, is the really just brilliant way that allows different storylines that were all disparate. Like, you know, The Question is from the Charlton character, Perkins.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, they brought all of these, you know, different properties that they had acquired together way back in the original Crisis on Infinite Earths, but it's still, to some degree, that never, you know, there was never a really conscious effort to try to draw the stories together.
Right. Yeah.
They were all just sort of thrown into a bowl and mixed together, and okay, there you go. But now they're trying to create some synergy between their origins, which is a neat little twist there as well, I find.
Well, and now they've basically completely backtracked on everything, and all the 52 universes exist again, and all these characters are back from the dead.
Well, that way they can set up for the Crisis on Finite Earths.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. You know, it's kind of fun, though. You know, it's a fun little thing, and I don't know. A lot of people get upset about the fact that they reboot everything, and honestly, it does get a little tiring, but I can't really get mad about it. The Convergence storyline they just did was actually very entertaining.
Convergence was definitely,
Sam was a big part of it.
Yeah, Shazam was, and it's you know, Shazam has come such a long way from whenever they rebooted him in the New 52, because in the New 52, if any of you kept up with Justice League, he was actually, I think, a 20-part little miniseries at the end of the Justice League comics.
Yeah, and it was like a supporting story.
Yeah, and it was interesting because, you know, at the time, Shazam wasn't really Justice League material. You know, he has always been depicted as part of the JSA, you know, Justice Society of America kind of character. And so having him at the end of the Justice League was a very interesting decision made by DC.
Well, and what's also fascinating is that Shazam has this unique, the Captain Marvel Shazam has this unique place in the DC universe because he's been a member of the Justice League during the 80s.
Yeah.
You know, once they got him in there, they tried to really utilize him, and he's had this sort of on-again, off-again relationship with the greater DCU, and I think that what is happening with the more modern incarnations is you're seeing that punched up even further.
One thing that I kind of get bothered by, and I know that we're like all over the place, we really are kind of all over the place, but the one big thing that kind of bothers me about the reboot of Shazam is they've kind of lost his child innocence. Like, if you watch like the Justice League movies that they're putting out now, he still has that. Sean Astin voices him.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
And he does a great job with it, and they kept him innocent, and they kept that childlike 40s kind of flair to the character in the cartoons.
Which is certainly what they were doing also in the 80s, because you had rather cleverly Captain Marvel and Guy Gardner being members of the Justice League of America at the same time.
Right.
And what you got was that juxtaposition of belligerent and this sort of innocence and almost Pollyanna-esque character who also had the power of the gods.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Go ahead.
Oh, it's also very interesting to see because, again, I'm sorry, rerouting back to New 52 based on his characteristics, he's still very much searching for, you know, just a purpose. And it's a very innocent factor of him, you know, but at the same time, they managed to write him in this way and develop him to where he's very innocent, but he's willing to do what it takes to protect the people he loves.
And it's a real change in attitude though too. Because instead of the innocence, to me, like a harmless innocence,
yes,
he's more angsty. He's like, yeah, very teen angst. And
he's very aggressive.
Yeah, okay. He gets mad and stuff.
So he's like trying to, it's almost a kind of all these decades later, it sounds almost like a coming of age. Like, you know, all of those years prior, you see him going from this sort of like innocent, you know, young child into growing by the 90s into a more aware of the world, yet still clinging to that innocence, to now where he's effectively reaching adolescence.
Right.
Yeah.
And then there's sort of, you know, he's got that confused, hair growing places where it wasn't kind of attitude.
Well,
and he almost like railing against everything while simultaneously still having touch with his former self.
Well, in a sense, you know, we all know Peter Parker, you know, started out as a teenager in the original comics. And it's very interesting, you know, how nowadays Peter Parker isn't even really depicted in modern comics as being a teenager. He's an adult now.
Yeah,
you know?
At some points he's been as much as, you know, well into career-minded adult.
Oh,
type,
yeah.
Where, you know, he's not out there freewheeling and kicking it up and you know.
Well, exactly.
Playing
and,
pranks on Flash Thompson.
Well, your idea of where he's kind of like growing up over, like, instead of, you know, 15 years, 75 years.
Yeah, I mean, but look at the Simpsons here, 30, you know, nearly 30 years later. Maggie's still a baby.
Right. But here, you can look at it that way. That's one way to look at it. Or you can look at it as, okay, we have to make all the characters as dark as possible, just like that.
Well, that's so true, yeah. I mean, if this were a Marvel character, my concept would be far more valid, because it would probably be far closer to the reality. And however, this being DC, and the current thinking at DC, and especially at Warner Pictures, yeah, I'd have to side with you on that. You know, we have to make everything dark after Dark Knight Returns.
I just want to make it very clear that I'm not taking punches. DC, I love DC. I'm just saying that. I'm just stating the obvious.
Oh yeah.
Well, and see, but the thing about it is what little people don't realize is that Shazam is a very comedic relief in a sense. Because, yes, he does have the comic is, the New 52 Shazam collection is a very serious issue. What's his, the scientist's name? Dr. Zasma?
Savannah,
thank you. And we see the origin of this character, which is very interesting. And that's actually how Black Adam is introduced, because Dr. Savannah, that's his name?
Yeah.
Thank you, awesome. He actually is searching for Black Adam. And so Billy just got the powers of Shazam, and it's very interesting how it worked, because it turns out that the wizard Shazam actually died after giving his powers to Billy Batson. And so Billy is just
kind of like a bee sting.
In a sense.
Now all of a sudden people are like rethinking Shazam, like, wow, I hadn't thought of it that way.
Well, it's very interesting to see, because then he just gets thrown back out into the world. And he's in this 30-year-old, you know, something perfect physique body, and has no clue what he's supposed to do with it.
Yeah,
you know?
He basically has been turned into Fred McMurray from my three sons.
Well, that's a good.
I wish I could take credit for that, but there was a wonderful Alex Ross illustration, which was done. You could tell it was an Alex Ross, but it was done in a medium. Maybe he just used different types of paints or something. It didn't look like his normal work, but you could tell it was his style. And he obviously modeled his Captain Marvel and this Captain Marvel family image after Fred McMurray. And then I would later read that, in fact, the character himself, the Captain Marvel character, was modeled on Fred McMurray.
Very well played, Cole. Very well played.
Well, do you want to know, this is actually what's very interesting, and what is a lot of fun to think about is, you know, during, you know, like you said, what was my three sons?
Yes.
Okay, it's very interesting to think about, you know, influences that may have influenced stuff like that. And I don't know if any of you out there are cool and have seen Big with Tom Hanks.
Oh,
phenomenal movie.
You're talking to old people here. We've seen Big.
Yeah, come on, man. I saw it in the theater when it came out.
That was back when we had time and money to go see movies.
Exactly. Or we had relatives that would pay for it.
Exactly.
Well, you know, just for anybody out there on the stream, you know, it's a movie with Tom Hanks, and it pretty much depicts a young boy who goes to a carnival and asks a fortune teller to let him be Big. And so he wakes up the next morning in the body of a, you know, 35-year-old man who is Tom Hanks.
Yeah, he basically wakes up in the body of a character actor from a TV sitcom.
Exactly. At the time, that's right.
At the time, that was, yeah. He was, this was his sort of not his first film, but really the one that cemented him.
Right.
Exactly.
You know, I think Joe versus the Volcano or some other forgettable vehicles came before that.
Well, and so that's kind of the way that Billy was, in a sense, because, you know, it's at the beginning of him being an adult, he's like, oh man, I can do whatever I want. He's like, I got these powers. He's like, you know, I can do whatever I want. And so as he's learning to do this stuff, you know, as I said previously, he's a foster kid. Well, he went to this foster home where there were five other kids that the family was taking care of, you know, and so
it's basically based on the Barney Miller spinoff Fish.
Exactly.
Where Detective Fish retired and was raising five foster children. God's truth, that was actually the concept behind the short-lived spinoff sitcom.
And at this point, I would like to ask the question to my son.
Yes.
Do you even know who Barney Miller is?
Or what that was?
I
warned you, you're working with old people here.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and so, you know, he's at this foster home. He doesn't feel he's really fitting in, you know? And, you know, he does reach out. I think his name is Eddie. Eddie, I think. And he reaches out to one of the other foster kids as Shazam. And the kid's like, how am I? He's like, whatever. He's like, you're not Billy, you know, because it's insane. And, you know, as he's trying to convince Eddie.
This is impossible. I've seen the movie Big. Go away, you strange superhero.
Exactly. And so, you know, while this is going on, Dr. Savannah is practically performing a ritual to reawaken Black Adam from the dead. And he, you know.
Yeah, and like Indominus Rex and Jurassic World, that's a great idea.
It's a great idea.
It's very, I mean, of course, you know, he's thinking that, oh, I just want to be, I'm just trying to help people. Because if we have access to magic, because he doesn't know that he's reviving Black Adam. You know, he's like, oh, I found magic, and if I can get it to the world, then we're gonna be solid. Like, we can pretty much do whatever we want.
Okay, and, wait. Is this Dr. Savannah or is this Shazam?
No, this is Dr. Savannah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and so, you know, flashing back to Billy, Billy finally convinces Eddie that he's Billy, right? Or Shazam does, I'm sorry. And so Shazam had a very modernized costume. You know, we're all used to his red costume with his white cape on his left shoulder.
That's right.
You know, and his huge lightning bolt.
And his bib. Don't forget his bib.
Yeah, his bib.
He's got that great cummerbund thing going on as well.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. It's phenomenal. And it's funny because this Shazam is very intimidating. He's designed with literally lightning bolts traveling through his costume and body all the time. And so he has these lightning bolts just, you know, going from panel to panel. They're just coursing through him.
Oh, and nice.
He has this, like, lightning aura to where there's lightning always coming out of him. And it's very interesting because they convert his little bib, you know, bib cape. They convert it into a full-fledged cape with a hood.
Yeah, I was going to say that he now can no longer wear his costume in Oklahoma.
Yeah. Well, see, it's even funnier because he has this hood, and while the hood's on, you know, it conceals his face, I guess you could say. But it's funny because he
so he's got a Shakespearean hood.
Well, yeah.
Like, even if you're the king and everyone in the entire realm knows exactly what you look like, you put a hood on, it could be anybody.
Exactly.
Yes.
It's his Clark Kent disguise.
That's right. Yeah. Where's Shazam go? I don't know.
But it's really cool because his character design, while this is going on, he also has lightning coming out of his eyes. So it looks very intimidating.
It's like this super Nikola Tesla.
In a sense, yes. It's like think Tesla mixed with like a Spider-Man backstory.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much what happens.
Or like Electro in the movie, if that had been a good story.
Oh, dang.
Dude, shots were just fired right there.
They were. And well-deserved ones at that.
Okay. I want to steer... I'm not trying to take over.
Please. In fact, I was going to say, we're coming up on about the halfway mark. And we're going to do something a little bit different. Because this is DC, we're going to go retro here, I think, because I think this is where Eric's heading, is let the old people talk. But no, go ahead, Eric.
I was just going to say, let's talk about Shazam in other mediums.
That's a good point. First, I want to point out a couple of quick little things on the history of Shazam.
Okay.
Of course, the character was known as Captain Marvel. The wizard Shazam gave him his powers. Yeah. And the Shazam was actually originally an anagram because he was to have the wisdom of Solomon, the strength of Hercules, the stamina of Atlas, which is about all Atlas had was stamina because he didn't get to go do anything.
Yeah.
The power of Zeus, the courage of Achilles, apparently, because they couldn't come up with any other classical A guys. And finally, the speed of Mercury. And you were talking earlier, Everett, about, you know, suddenly being imbued with all that power. And I think that was one of the brilliant things about the character, even 60-some-odd, 70-some-odd years ago, is they took the idea of a kid being given the power of, like, Superman plus...
And that's the beautiful thing about it is what little people don't know this. It's that Shazam is one of the only characters in the DC universe that can actually go head to head against Superman.
That's very true. But what's interesting is the Shazam name derives itself from things that give you all of the accoutrements of a superhero.
Exactly.
But that S at the very beginning is that wisdom of Solomon is the most vital of those, because without that, everything else becomes like the characters in Kingdom Come, where you have these young Supermen just running riot.
Exactly. Well,
you know what, man? I never put that together.
Yeah, therein lay the complete, in my mind, the complete brilliance of that character.
Yeah.
Is they recognize, the creators of this character recognize that if you gave it, you'd get the Wish It in the Cornfield Billy from Twilight Zone otherwise.
Yeah.
Well, and going back to your anagram meeting, it's still, I totally got off track about that, but it's still very much reverts to that, I guess you could say, anagram, because, you know, they do show the gods, actually, and this is where it got a little bit politically correct. You know, they show Zeus is an African-American, like, reggae guy. He's got dreads and stuff, and this goes back to the punishment of Pandora, and...
Okay. I thought it was maybe, like, Haman Zeus.
Yeah.
Haman, how many gods you got?
Well, that's where I don't know if we were gonna discuss Black Adam, but that's actually Pandora is a huge influence on Black Adam.
Okay, well that makes good sense as well. But Eric brings up a very interesting point because this is one of those characters. The other thing I wanted to touch on really quickly is the reason DC owns the character.
Exactly. It,
is that Fawcett published first in first appeared in Wiz Comics in February 1940, and then I always heard that, you know, they got sued for infringing too much on Superman. It was a ripoff as far as, and the court sided with National Periodicals, and it became a property of DC that they did nothing with for decades until the crisis. the reality was that this was published for several years. Captain Marvel was around for a long time, I think over a decade, if I'm not mistaken, before DC, the famous DC lawsuit on copyright infringement came about. And the real catalyst wasn't that this character was too much like Superman. That was the, you know, court document reason. The real reason was his books were outselling Superman, and that would not stand.
We
cannot allow such a travesty.
Right. Well, another thing that I just kind of learned while I was doing research, not only was it outselling Superman, but then on top of that, Republic Pictures was planning on doing a Superman serial, and things went south. And basically, from what I understood, they scrapped the Superman serial, and when that didn't pan out, they went to Fawcett and was like, hey, you guys want to do a Shazam movie?
Yeah, it's like Undercutter's licensing there. I'm sure Fawcett was like, hell, how much are you going to give us for this?
Yep.
We'll take whatever you're willing to give.
So, yeah, I'm pretty sure that probably didn't help the situation either.
And here is an interesting little tidbit about Shazam's bib cape that I find absolutely fascinating. Your Vegas period Elvis Presley.
Ooh. Yeah.
Elvis Presley was a huge fan of Captain Marvel.
Oh, wow.
Way.
And that was the influence for the capes and his cat suits.
Oh, I can totally see that. Because his capes were short like Shazam.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I have a cape kind of like a Shazam now.
Wow.
And what's really fascinating is Alex Ross utilized that in the design of the Kingdom Come Captain Marvel Jr., known in the, I don't even know if it's mentioned by name, but known in sort of the backstory as King Marvel.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't really know much about that.
He's deliberately designed to look like, apparently, Captain Marvel Jr. is now kind of like, I guess, you know, when he's not working as a superhero, as a, he either marries people in Vegas or he's an Elvis impersonator.
Right.
So it was sort of like taking the concept full circle, which I thought was really clever.
Right. Okay. I'm going to go ahead and give you your moment, Cole, to shine, because I know that you're anticipating.
No, you know this is in my wheelhouse.
You're drumming your fingers just waiting for it to come up. Go ahead, man.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Everett, I'm not sure if you're familiar with this, and I'm not precisely certain of your age, so I'm not sure how appropriate it is to recommend this to you.
Not yet.
Okay. So don't check this out yet. But when you get the green light, as someone who really appreciates the concepts, the history, the story of Captain Marvel, of Shazam, something that very often writer Alan Moore is one of a couple of writers, he and J. Michael Straczynski especially, have written the best versions of existing characters as other characters.
Wait, time out. You're about to tell me that Dr. Manhattan's based on Shazam, aren't you?
No, actually not. I'm going to tell you that there is a book that was originally published back in the 70s, I believe, or 80s, rather. Published in the 80s in England, there was an anthology series called Warrior Magazine. And two things came out of Warrior Magazine that were groundbreaking, and that was both by Alan Moore, the serialized story V for Vendetta, which the magazine went under before it was ever completed. And that in itself was a story we covered in depth when we talked about Alan Moore. But the other title that he wrote was called, in England was called Marvel Man.
One sec. Dad?
What?
You're, There we go.
Sorry. All right, we were feeding back a little bit there. I thought King Marvel was doing a little concert there.
But, some nice little music going on in the background for you.
Oh, hey, yeah, you've got to, hey, man, make sure that you keep swiping the keyboard. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So the title was known in England as Marvel Man and was imported to the U.S. By First Comics initially as Miracle Man.
Oh, yes, I actually do know about this.
Ah, very good. Miracle yes. Man is literally the best Captain Marvel story ever told.
No, okay.
Because it is essentially designed to be a blatant ripoff or a tribute, actually, to that story. And it creates a way to take the silly idea of, you know, magic and all and give it a scientific foundation. It gives you a worthwhile Dr. Savannah, who's not just some goofus. It gives you everything that is at the core of Captain Marvel and then gives you a brutally honest human tale.
Okay, wait a minute. Are you telling me that Alan Moore wrote a book that has magic in it?
No, it doesn't. It takes. He did write some books that had magic in them, but this wasn't one of them.
Okay.
It basically replaced magic with alien technology.
It's very cool because it was a very for the time period. Alan Moore. This was right about the time that Watchmen came out, right?
Actually, Marvel Man predates Watchmen
before that,
quite a bit. However, it did also. Once it was published in the States as Miracle Man, it's a little closer to the arrival, or about neck and neck with Watchmen.
The same kind of concept.
Well, what it did, what Miracle Man or Marvel Man, depending on which side of the world you're on, what it did was take the concept of the young boy changing into the adult superhero. Give it a feasible science fiction kind of reality, a reason for being, and then it turns everything on its ear, right down to the Captain Marvel family, because you have this backstory where there's the Miracle Man. If I'm going to go with the version I'm familiar with. You have Miracle Man. You have Miracle Man. Or was it? Kid Miracle Man, and I think it was like Miracle Man Jr. or something like that.
Yeah.
And his key word was
Young Marvel Man.
Young Miracle Man. His key word was Kimota, which is if you spelled atomic with a K and then spelled it backward.
Yeah.
And which lends it that kind of ridiculous simplicity. But when you get into the story, all that melts away and is replaced with just this dire kind of Alan Moore-esque dark carnival of the soul. Because the story of Kid Miracle Man is as tragic as it is terrible. Right down to the Mary Marvel character, who is little more than just a little side project of Dr. Emil Garganza, who is your actual Dr. Savannah.
Yeah.
And Alan Moore has this wonderful way of weaving a story where you're not really quite sure what someone's trying to say until all the pieces fall together. You're like, oh my God, this is the most brilliant thing I've ever seen in my life. After over a decade, nearly two decades, if I'm not mistaken, mired in litigation hell.
Yeah.
I used to own the collected editions of all the Alan Moore Miracle Mans. I loaned them to somebody I have never been able to figure out who and never got them back.
Oh.
And for years, if you could find the collected editions, they were $300-$400 a piece because they weren't published on the scale that Marvel and DC published collections.
Right.
And even the individual issues could run to get that just that up to that point. Would be in the hundreds and hundreds of dollars, potentially. And Marvel, finally, they're out of that litigation hell. They're being published by Marvel in hardcover editions, which pisses me off no end. And what pisses me off even further is they're taking what would have been the original first publications trade paperbacks, publishing that material, and then as fluff, half the book's a bunch of garbage.
Right. You were talking about that in another episode.
The second volume is just, it's a bunch of, it's basically the layouts and the couches behind the scenes. You're just getting the same stuff you've already seen, only without the word bubbles and still in pencils. Like,
yeah.
No, you don't get to charge twice as much for this crap.
Yeah, you won those, or you gave one of those to Bobby, right?
Actually, Bobby Blakey gave me the first edition.
Gave it to
you.
Yeah,
he had reviewed it, and he was complaining to me when he gave it to me. He says, I don't know, it was seemed like a pretty good story, and all of a sudden it just changed gears. I was looking at it, I said, oh, here's why. There's actually a break point, and they don't really tell you you're done with that part of the original story. But I highly recommend it to people who are familiar with Captain Marvel or fans of Captain Marvel, because it's Captain Marvel literally grown up, and where he takes these characters is, I mean, you know, Armageddon level stuff.
So what they reprinted, is that the Michelangelo stuff, or is that the actual
first part of each of those hardcover editions? So far, I think they've done at least 3 volumes, and I think there were 4 volumes that covered Alan Moore stuff. And then after he left, somebody else took over. But
So they're just covering the 80s stuff.
Yeah, this is the original Eclipse. I said it was First Comics. It was Eclipse Comics who had. I have to applaud them. In the first volume, they did effectively, you know, bleep out by covering over the use of the N-word by Evelyn Cream.
Uh-huh.
And so I was a little concerned about what they were going to do in the second volume when their daughter's born, and there's a whole issue of Miracle Man
delivering the baby.
Yeah, playing midwife. And they did not pull those punches, thankfully.
Okay, so this is that series, because I remember you talking about this with Andrew.
Yeah, I could go on for days about that. Another interesting thing about, I remember, you know, when Watchmen, especially about the time the movie was finally in the works again and was going to happen, a big deal was made about a book that was actually published in 1977. And kept getting revivals because somebody got it in their head, or maybe Alan Moore had mentioned that having read it and inspiring Watchmen in some way. And so this novel called Super Folks was re-released, and with a big starburst saying, you know, inspired Alan Moore's Watchmen. And right. I read the damn thing. And it would, to me, it would be more of an inspiration for The Impossibles than it was for Watchmen.
Okay.
Because it is so tongue-in-cheek. And, you know, you have this Superman-type character who is known as Indigo. And he is from the planet Kronk.
Jeez.
That was destroyed. Okay. He's like the sole survivor of the planet Kronk. And he is vulnerable to, yes, you guessed it, Kronkite.
So basically, it was a total satire.
The funny thing is, it's satirical, yet at the same time, it's serious.
Okay.
So it's an interesting read. But the reason I bring it up in this case is there is an analog to the Captain Marvel family and to Dr. Savannah, in that you have this family of heroes known under the banner of Captain Mantra, which I thought was a brilliant nod to, you know, say having a keyword. Because like in Miracle Man, the other two, Miracle Man Jr. and Kid Miracle Man, simply say Miracle Man.
Yeah.
And in fact, in the course of Miracle Man, you're even introduced to, brilliantly, Dr. Gargunza says, you know, anytime science is on the march, we always experiment on animals before we do it. You know, we do things with animals before we'd ever do it with a human being. And you're introduced to Miracle Dog, which sounds laughable until you see what that means in the case of the story. But in this case, Captain Mantra, there is you know, Indigo has to go look for Captain Mantra, who's, like, you know, sequestered himself off, and Mary Mantra has, like, she's become a nun, because their last great battle with their enemy, he had them in their not, you know, their regular human kid forms, and they were supposed to be like cousins or brother and sister or something like that, and they were, you know, in this, it was going to be, there was something where they couldn't change into their super form, and they were just about to be brutally killed, and that became aroused, and kind of inadvertently coupled.
Yeah.
And there's this, forgive this, we do occasionally play blue on this show, that said that that was, there was something about that coupling, actually broke the giant fuck meter on Uranus. So this was another case where it was sort of strangely tongue-in-cheek and strangely serious at the same time.
Sorry.
Getting back, it's we're coming up here on an hour, I think.
Wow, look at you jumping to be all Andy. Like, yeah, we're coming up.
No.
Perfect, because this is the point where Andy would be like, yeah, we're coming up on it, folks.
We'll see. Look, real quick, let's give some recognition to some of the things that Shazam has done over the years. As you all know, he was originally in the Fawcett comic industry publications. He switched to DC later on. A couple other, you know, pretty big story arcs that he's been in. Infinite Crisis, Kingdom Come, The Trials of Shazam. He's made actually quite a bit of video game appearances. He appeared in Mortal Kombat versus DC Universe. I don't know how many of you out there are gamers. He is the most overpowered character in the game. You can literally just spam his lightning bolts. Anyway... he has made a ton of appearances in DC Universe Online. He is currently being used in Infinite Crisis. You know, he was just in Injustice Gods Among Us. And for any of you that have been living under a rock, he has a movie coming out within the next 5 years, I think.
Oh, hey, I got that joke, by the way, under a rock.
Oh, yeah. Much like the Wizard Shazam with his,
yeah,
with his boulder of Damocles there.
Well, and as you know, none of you know, he will be in an upcoming DC Cinematic Universe movie with Dwayne Johnson starring as Black Adam.
And the thing about it is, I remember reading somewhere that, you know, he was keen to play either character, and I thought, you know, he is a shoe-in for Black Adam. He's perfect.
Well, and what...
I've seen Black Adam stuff where it looked like him before he was even a thing, you know, probably even before he was born. It was like, they literally, someone drawing Black Adam invented Dwayne Johnson.
Well, do you want to know what's even funnier and what people don't realize is actually, as soon as the superhero movie boom happened, I guess you could say, whenever Batman Begins came out, during the time about, I'd probably say in the production of The Dark Knight, Dwayne Johnson was cast as Black Adam in an upcoming Captain Marvel movie.
I did not know that part, but I did know that there was one in the works, and it was,
yes,
going to be the kind of lighthearted, you know, playful innocence,
yeah,
kind of goofy fun thing.
And so he was originally cast as Black Adam in the original Captain Marvel movie. And, you know, it was in production, and once they saw the success of The Dark Knight, they kind of just threw it under the rug and
started. Yeah, in fact, unfortunately, the brain trust at Warner decided that it was Dark that sells, and it's become this unfortunate misnomer, because the thing that they missed, it's like, here they had this tremendous success by very brilliantly making a movie that I often described as not just being a good Batman movie. It was a good movie that just happened to be about Batman.
Yeah.
And that was the thing that they miss, is this is a... Dark sells dark characters.
Yes.
Dark does not sell an entire universe of characters.
Well, and I think that I could go on ton of...
It's bad time. It's bad time.
Well,
look at you moderating over here.
Yeah, I know, right? yeah, man, so Shazam is definitely, you know, check him out if you haven't already.
And there's such a long history with the character. You've got periods where, you know, once he was introduced through Crisis on Infinite Earths, once the Fawcett universe were brought on board. And granted, a lot of that was just goofy as all, you know, you're not going to get any goofier than, like, Mr. Atom, the giant robot that looked like a GoBots refugee.
Yeah.
And some of those characters. But at the same time, they were able to, you know, fold him into this universe. They brilliantly found ways to, you know, you had this great sort of rivalry with Guy Gardner in the period of the Justice League I was speaking of earlier, who referred to him as Captain Whitebread.
Oh, man.
And I think that's why it worked to have him in there, because you had him as a foil to Guy Gardner and vice versa.
Yeah.
They represented opposite sides of a coin.
Well, and now it's the huge deal now is Shazam and Cyborg.
Ah.
Which is, it's a very fascinating duo. You know, Billy in the New 52, I know that he's about 17 years old. And, you know, Cyborg has already graduated. So, hasn't necessarily graduated, but by the time he meets Shazam, he's probably about 19, you know? And it's a very interesting
thing. He got de-aged back to his Teen Titans era.
Yes.
And probably even a little younger.
Yeah.
Undoubtedly to, put him more in continuity with the Teen Titans!
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah,
Because a lot of the retooling comes to the reincarnations of a lot of these characters and making them accessible to people who grew up with them in a different sort of way.
Yeah.
You know, and the opposite side of that particular coin was the young girl who discovered that her favorite Teen Titans Go character, Starfire, was vastly different in the comics.
Yes.
To the point of being something of a harlot, which was a bit of a shock if you're not half expecting that.
Yeah.
And here I was complaining that I wasn't half expecting Ultron to be snarky, and it took half the movie to get used to that and really enjoy it for what it was. Imagine her sense of shock. So, as we're wrapping up, first I want to thank both of my guests, the Shirey boys who have come on board here to you know, talk up a character that has had this interesting history of being like sort of the almost forgotten powerhouse of DC.
Yeah.
Yet never really, apart from the period between, you know, about the 60s or so when they, late 50s when they obtained the character through about the 70s when they finally decided to do something with it. At DC, otherwise just never really completely fell out of the spotlight. It was just one of those characters that, if you weren't familiar with it, you never knew how the character had grown.
Yeah.
Beyond that original quirky, fun, happy-go-lucky type character.
Yeah, and he's just never really, and it's kind of, he's just never really gotten a chance to shine, I guess. You know, he's just, they've kind of just used him as a side character a lot of the times. And, you know, he just, I don't know. He's just a very intriguing character. And, yeah, check him out.
Absolutely. And it's nice to see him continue to grow and evolve with toward the new modern reader and, you know, become relevant in each new era, as it were. So, Eric and Everett, thank you very much. Do you have anything you need to plug as far as where we might find you, Eric?
Well, Everett does he does reviews for me or with me for my site, which is ersink.com, or you can find me through ericshirey.com, either way. But yeah, I just do reviews, movie reviews, DVD reviews, comic book reviews, mainly DC, because that's what I like.
I think, and, now I've got the point where I know so many reviewers like yourself, Bobby Blakey, Starman Morrison.
Right.
I think I'm gonna start a new website where I review reviews.
You know what? You know what? That would be different.
Before you read their review, read my review of them, of their review.
And then of course, me and Vic, who is actually the illustrious Eddie Medina's brother.
Yes, Victor Medina, who has been on the Rancor Pit before. We need to have him back on.
We actually run a site that has skyrocketed, ridiculous. Revenge of the Fifth with a 5.
Oh yes.
.net, and that has recently seriously taken off.
Yeah.
But we run it. We do that, and then of course I want to plug for Vic, my good man Vic. He does a site, collectoramashow.com.
Yes.
Which basically just kind of, you know, it's the stuff that he likes and he puts it up there. but it's cool stuff.
Yeah, and ultimately that, you know, when you have one of these things like a site of your own, it becomes kind of a your own little bully pulpit if you want, and just to make it fun and accessible to people is what it's all about. And I do want to point out that I hope everyone got this has become an amazing opportunity to share with those who follow this series exactly the reason I wanted to have Everett on the show, because you know the time where they're hanging out this garage sale thing, I'm like, oh, there's no way you're going to get away with like being that knowledgeable and that articulate about what you know and not be on one of my damn shows. So thank you very much for joining us.
Honestly, I think we probably could make it two or three episode show.
Trust me, the hour is even worse with the live shows when we get people in the studio and we're like, where did that hour go? So thanks to my guests. Thank you, everybody, listening in. Andy should be back with us. He is out fighting crime, or I think he's in Muggerville this week. So checking in with the Muggerville 7. And I think hopefully you got some extra pants, because that's the first thing they steal. So in the meantime, we will be back next week. I believe our topic is going to be, and if it wasn't already, it will be now, Secret Agent Man. We're going to talk about government agents and agencies in comics. And we will be back a week from today. Tomorrow, if you are in Grapevine, Texas, be sure and check out the DFW G.I. Joe and Comic Show in Grapevine. Or there is a brand new convention. As you know, I run Convention Awareness Project Texas at www.cap-tx.info. Cap Texas! And just found out, thank you to Eric, about
an hour ago,
or just over, a convention. It was at ArlingCon, I believe it is, at the, I'm trying to see where I had found some information on it. It is at the E.H. Herford University Center, I believe on the UTA campus.
Yes,
on the campus of UTA, gaming, cosplay, comics, you name it, kind of convention that thankfully I found out just in the nick of time is happening. So this is their first one. It's free. Go and check that out if you can. And check out all the stuff on Convention Awareness Project Texas. You can write to us at jcumail@yahoo.com. Occasionally I get around to doing some Twitter stuff. Our feed is at the Jedi Cold, or sorry, at the JCU. Or no, at the Jedi Cole U, that's how often I use it, right there. You can find the Jedi Cole Universe, Hey Kids Comics, Rancor Pit on Twitter, on Twitter, on Facebook. And, of course, tomorrow also will be the final episode of Hey Kids Comics Live on deepelemonair.com. Andrew has moved, and I will not, that is his show, this is his show, and I'm not going to try to make the live version something it wasn't. So do join us for that. We're doing a play on the I'd Rather Be Watching Daredevil cast with my older brother Clay and hopefully Hunter Dusing from Midnight Movie Cowboys. And finally, check out the Rancor Bit Live with myself and Eddie Medina on deepelemonair.com. And until next week, read, enjoy, collect, and get out there and be a part of comics in any way you can.
That's right.
All right. Thanks, man.
Thank you, guys.
Take care.
All right. That is a show, gentlemen.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Hey, I wasn't trying to take over.
No, I'm glad, because really the thing about it is I want everyone's voice heard, and there was there's just too much ground to cover, no matter what we're talking about. And
right,
you know, every time I hang up on one of these things, that I'm thinking of like 40 things I wanted to talk about, and I tell you, I kid you not, it is worse on the live show.
Well,
hour just flies.
Yeah, I actually was. I wanted to say something about before what's his name Moore launched Marvel Man.
Yeah,
it was originally the reason Marvel Man even became a character was because in Britain or in England, whatever you call it.
I think it answers to both.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. But in right, yes. But yeah, in England, the reason that Marvel Man was made was because there was a publishing company. They ran out of Captain Marvel material to publish, and the guy wouldn't let it go. He was like, "Okay, fine. If I don't get more of it, we'll just keep it going ourselves."
Exactly. Well, that's neat.
Yeah. So that's how. So basically, he had a guy come in, and they even renumbered. They didn't even start a new numbering. It was like Captain Marvel number 24, and then the very next month, it was Marvel Man number 25. Yeah,
it's almost like the old like Marvel series, like, you know, Journey in the Mystery or something like that, that would then become really. Marvel Showcase, for example, that would become
right
else, and then that whatever title it became permanently never had a number one.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so I thought that was kind of interesting too, which I thought would have been interesting to put in there, but that's fine. Yeah, no,
trust me, you won't believe how much material never makes it in.
Right. I didn't want you to feel like I was taking over.
No,
just,
not at all. In fact, yeah, I was going to try to interject in some of the background of the older end of things, so we really did get heavily into the new stuff. However, that's very relevant and would not have been nearly as well covered but for Everett.
Yeah.
So, gentlemen, thank you. I need to get some sleep. I've been staying.
Yeah, I know, man. I gotta go, too.
Yeah. I'm staying at like 2 or 3 in the morning, and they're like, oh, crap, what am I thinking?
Yeah, well, yeah, and tomorrow, of course, I have to work in the morning, so.
Naturally.
I usually work at the store in like 3 to 10.
Oh, so you get to have a different start time to your day.
Yes, exactly.
Indeed.
Except usually I'm still up at 7 o'clock writing and stuff.
Plus something was in the air today, and I left work early, and I'm finally getting to feel back to normal, so I'm going to keep that momentum going as well.
And maybe that's what's wrong with me, too, because I've had these, like, really bad headaches in the back of my head.
Yeah, there's something going on, and I think it's, you know, product of the weather change.
Right.
You know, we're going from tropical to southern U.S. to tropical again.
Right. The ongoing weather change.
Yeah, so.
Fucking ridiculous. Hey, have you been to the Justice League thing at Six Flags yet?
No, I haven't. I haven't been to Six Flags in ages.
Dude, I went Monday, and it was.
Yeah, I saw your photo of Aquaman there. And I had seen someone else had posted a picture. I think no matter who it is, everyone takes that same picture at the same angle. I don't think it's like almost like whatever you're on or near, whatever. There's you can't get a picture at any other angle of that.
You can't.
So, literally every single picture I've seen, you could probably sit right next to each other, and but for like changes in the light, for the time of day and the weather conditions,
right,
look almost identical.
Well, the Justice League Battle for Metropolis 4D ride is phenomenal, man. I was totally blown away, and it's inside of the building. They made the building look like the Hall of Justice.
Oh, nice.
And I am talking, it is legit Hall of Justice. This thing is big.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, it's pretty cool. And
Jurassic Park, spared no expense.
Yep, exactly. But yeah, no, I really did. Yeah, it was really cool, and I would highly recommend it to anybody that's, you know, in the, you know, DC and stuff.
Excellent. Well, guys, I need to get going, but if either of you, if you like the Star Wars and want to come on the Ranker Pit sometime, let me know, and I'll shoot you some what our projected shows are coming up, because I've actually got to review that anyway.
I'm about to head out. I'm going to let you go, but I was going to tell you, I got hooked up with Order 66.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to be heading out there to pick up a bunch of Tarkin stuff. I've decided I'm going to start a Tarkin exclusive collection.
Nice. Tarkin focus collection.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I've already talked to them, and I'm actually going to head out there and pick up a bunch of junk from them.
Nice.
Have you been out there yet?
I did finally make it out. It's a really cool place. They're a great bunch of guys. Like any kind of aftermarket collectible operation, it's hit and miss as far as I'm concerned on how proud they are of what they have.
Right.
But that's literally true of anybody. I mean, even like I was trying to do a tour of toys one day. I think it was off on a Wednesday.
Right.
And I was going to go there and to Dallas Vintage Toys, and then finally for the first time to DFW Vintage Toys.
Right.
I was going to publish an article called The Tour of Toys, or The Dallas Tour of Toys. And we got over to DFW Vintage Toys, and they're open like 3 days a week.
Right.
Like Thursday, Friday, Saturday. What the hell? How is that even a thing?
Right.
So I have yet to be able to put this thing together.
Well, I'm just going to head out there, and I mean, he went through everything, and he kind of talked to me about, like, all the stuff, and he gave me prices, and a lot of the prices that he was giving me were competitive with, Amazon and the eBay.
It literally ranged from the bargains to reasonable to the outrageous.
He's got like the figures that I need, the like 3/4-inch Tarkin figures.
Yeah.
And he was like telling me like $7. I was like, oh, okay. I was like, the only one that he quoted me that I had an issue with was the 12-inch Tarkin dolls with the interrogator droid.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Dude, he quoted me $75, man, and I was like, "Whoa, wait a minute!" Everywhere I'm looking, they're like $20.
Oh yeah, you can definitely do better.
Yeah, I was like, and then he said something about the statues, which I know you have one because you're the first person I ever saw with
statue. If I'm not mistaken, that was actually the first of the Gentle Giant statues I ever bought for myself. Because
right, and that was like
that was a gorgeous piece.
That was like, what, 40, 45 when you bought it?
When they originally came out, yeah, I think the earliest, right, they started out at 45, and then, you know, over the years they've crept up to now, where I think they're about, the base price is like about 75 nowadays for a statue of that scale.
Yeah, see, he quoted me 100 on that one.
You can probably do better on Tarkin. Tarkin's one of those ones, because it's early enough in the run where you don't see it on the aftermarket much.
Right.
But the one I have on display is actually my second. Years ago, one of the cats decided she needed to be behind the statues on that shelf.
Yeah.
And then stretched out, and Tarkin and Akbar took a tumble.
Oh.
And, it got worse. More recently, one of the new kittens decided she needed to be behind the Mara Jade mini bust.
Oh.
Which was a Comic-Con exclusive. So it set me back more than it. I spent more to replace that than I spent to replace the two that were destroyed years ago.
Sheesh. Yeah, the Tarkin Gentle Giant, that, from what I've seen, is really honestly the most expensive piece of merchandise that he has so far.
Yeah, I think, bar none, you're going to find that that's... Because there's not a lot, so it's a good focus.
Yeah, and that's why I did it, too. You know, I was like...
you can bunch everything together, like, you know, I need to do another article for USG called Hammer Time 2, because I've darn near got every kind of hammerhead and a Thorian, anything that can be had.
Right, and what's funny is I told some guy that I was doing an exclusive Tarkin collection, and he looked at me and he goes, why in the world would you limit yourself like that? And I said, let me tell you why, dude. Because I don't want to go my entire life as an OCD person trying to find every freaking Star Wars.
You should see me trying to find when I found out there was a Tactics Hammerhead.
See, I think there's an Tactics Tarkin too, but you can find those.
Yeah.
You can find
Tarkin was one of the ones I'm sure that's not going to be hard to find, but apparently Hammerhead was like tail end of the thing, like to get the Mighty Beans Hammerhead.
Right.
Which was Australian only.
Right. All right, man, we got to get out of here.
Yeah, I know. We can get going again, and we can do, may as well just record another show. All right, take care, guys.
All right, man, take care. Bye.